أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
Surah 53
Surah An-Najm
Title The opening word of the surah, Wa Al-Najm, happens to be its title. However, the title is not indicative of its contents. It is only a marker. Period of Revelation The hadith collections of Bukhari, Muslim, Abu Dawud, and Nasai contain the following report from Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. It is the first surah containing a verse that contains a prostration of recital. Sajda,
At-tilawa.
Other variants of this hadith were recorded by Aswad ibn Yazid, Abu Ishaq, and Zuhair ibn Muawiyah on Ibn Mas'ud's authority. These indicate that
An-Najm
was the first Quranic surah to be recited by the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, in a public gathering of the Quraysh. According to Ibn Mardawiyah, the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, recited it inside the Kaaba in the presence of Muslims and unbelievers. At the end of the recitation, when he prostrated after reciting the verse and telling sajda,
At-tilawa.
All those present fell into prostration as well. Even the unbelieving chiefs who led the opposition to Islam could not resist prostrating. According to Ibn Mas'ud, among the unbelievers, I saw only Umayyah ibn Khalaf not falling into prostration. He picked up dust and rubbed it on his forehead, saying that this alone sufficed for him. At a later date, Umayyah was killed while he was an unbeliever. Al-Mutalib ibn Abi Wa'da, another eyewitness to this incident, had not yet embraced Islam. His account, as featured in the hadith collections of Nasai and Ahmad, is as follows. When the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, prostrated after reciting Surah
An-Najm,
all those present followed him in prostration. However, I did not do so. Now, to compensate for that, I never miss the prostration when I recite this Surah. Ibn Sa'd informs that prior to this incident, in Rajab, in the fifth year of the Prophet's era, a group of companions had migrated to Abyssinia. When the above incident of the Muslims and unbelievers falling into prostration during Ramadan at the Prophet's recitation of Surah
An-Najm
occurred, the incident was reported to these migrants in a way that indicated the unbelieving Meccans had accepted Islam. Upon receiving this report, some of them returned to Mecca in Shawwal in the fifth year of the Prophet's era. However, on return, they found that Muslims were still persecuted by the Quraysh. This resulted in the second wave of migration to Abyssinia. This time, the number of migrants was higher. From the above, it is clear that this surah was revealed in Ramadan of the fifth year of the Prophet's era. Circumstantial setting. We've already discussed the historical context of this surah. In the first 5 years of his prophetic career, the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, recited the word of God in private and in select gatherings with a view to inviting the listeners to Islam. During this long period, he had never had an opportunity to recite the Quran in a public gathering, for the unbelievers did not allow him to do so. They were afraid of the immense appeal of the Prophet's personality and his call, and also of the Quran. They therefore ensured that neither they nor anyone else could listen to the Quran. Their plan was to discredit the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, by spreading false propaganda to stop the call to Islam before it could spread. To this end, they spread the slur far and wide that the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, had gone astray and was bent on misleading others as well. Moreover, they would create a din wherever the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, tried to recite the Quran. This prevented people from hearing the Quran and from finding out the truth about the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him. It was against this backdrop that one day the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, rose to speak beside the Kaaba. At that time, a large number of the members of the Quraysh were present. Allah inspired him to recite what we know today as Surah
An-Najm.
It was such an eloquent and forceful oration that his detractors did not dare interrupt him. Rather, they joined him in prostration when he did the same at the end of the Surah. However, they soon realized their mistake and were reproached by those people of the Quraysh who had not been there. Whereas the Quraysh used to stop everyone from hearing the Quran, now they listen to it and even join the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, in prostration. In order to salvage their reputations, they resorted to saying that they had heard the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, saying that Al-Lat, Al-Uzza and Manat are great idols and that their intercession would prevail. They mistook this for a return to his ancestral faith. Only an insane person, however, would buy the story that their version would have featured in the context of Surah
An-Najm.
Subject matter and themes. The objective of this surah is to warn the Meccan unbelievers against their opposition to the Quran and the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him. In the opening of the surah, it is asserted that the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, is not some misguided person, as the unbelievers falsely allege, nor is he the author of Islam, although the unbelievers hurled this baseless charge against him as well. Rather, all that he presents is based wholly on the unadulterated divine revelation sent down to him. The truths preached by him are not figments of his imagination. He has witnessed these truths firsthand. He has seen with his own eyes the angel that imparts divine knowledge to him. He has observed directly the great signs of his Lord. His assertions are not fabricated, but real and true. Disputing of these truths is akin to a blind person denying the sight of something that is evident to everyone who can see. The following three themes are taken up in this surah. 1. The unbelievers are told that their faith rests only on speculation and man-made assumptions. They idolize Al-Lat, Al-Uzza, and Manat, although these persons do not have even an iota of divinity. They brand angels as God's daughters, notwithstanding of the fact that they consider the birth of daughters to be a personal stigma. They assume that their idols will prevail upon God in interceding for them, when the truth is that even the archangels cannot ask him to do anything. The unbelievers' beliefs are unsupported by logic or knowledge. Driven by their whims, they mistake their superstitions for reality. This is the basic flaw in their stance. A true faith always conforms to reality, which has nothing to do with whims and base desires. No one can change reality. Knowledge, not speculation, helps man in this realm. It is a pity that they reject the knowledge presented to them. What an irony that they brand the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, as misguided when he seeks to lead them to the straight way. Their utter disregard for the hereafter accounts for their error. They only exist for this world, and as a result, they do not aspire to true knowledge, nor do they care whether their false notions conform to truth or not. 2. It is affirmed that Allah alone is the master and ruler of the entire universe. The guided ones are those who follow his way. Those not following his way are astray. Allah knows the error and guidance of everyone. He is fully aware of everyone's actions. One's fate will not be decided on the basis of one's whims. Regardless of one's tall claims to piety, one's fate hinges on his piety in the sight of Allah. If one shuns major sins out of his boundless mercy, Allah may overlook one's minor sins. 3. Some salient features of the true faith are presented, which figured also in the scriptures of Prophets Abraham and Moses, peace and blessings be upon them, which were sent down thousands of years before the Quran. They are presented to remove the misconception that the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, is espousing a novel idea. Rather, it should convince everyone that the same basic truths have been articulated by all the messengers of Allah. With reference to those scriptures, the surah shows that the peoples of Ad and Thamud and the prophets Noah and Lot, peace and blessings be upon them, were not destroyed accidentally. Rather, Allah destroyed them as punishment for their excesses and rebellion. The Meccan unbelievers too are immersed in the same excesses and rebellion, and they are disinclined to change. The surah concludes that God's decision is at hand, and no one can defer it. The Meccan unbelievers are warned in the same way that earlier unbelievers were. There is nothing odd or novel about his divine message. Why do they jeer at it? Why do they create chaos so that others may not listen to it? Do they not feel ashamed over their foolishness? They should better give up their false stance and submit themselves to Allah and worship Him. This was the conclusion so eloquent, so effective, that on listening to the surah, even the diehard unbelievers could not control themselves. So when the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, prostrated at the conclusion of this surah, they too fell into prostration.